We live in a fantasy world now. Reality has been destroyed.
This is the time that we really need to pay attention.
The probabilities are overwhelmingly on gold's side.
That is the best environment to see gold increase its value.
Welcome to Palisades Gold Radio. I'm your host, Tom Bojovics. Joining me today is Vince Lancey, founder of Echo Bay Partners and contributor to Zero Hedge. How are you today, Vince?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Tom. Good to be back.
Excellent to see you again. So you were recently a part of the Basel III roundtable that I had the pleasure of hosting. So was there anything that you wanted to summarize or maybe add to the conversation that we didn't cover in that interview?
Yeah, I mean, being with that group, I heard mostly everyone say the same thing from different, I guess, vantage points. And united with mine, I think one of the messages I think that comes out of it, especially since the implementation has happened and we don't have any fireworks, I think one of the messages that has to come out is that people should not have expected fireworks. However, this cannot be bad for the investor, the stacker, the non-leveraged player. It will be bad for the medium to large sized hedge fund that thinks they can get a lot of volume done. And what I mean is, when you put together all the things that everyone said, there's going to be less banks transacting business. So that means you're going to have not a cartel, but a one-stop shop, right? And there's going to be more cost passed down to intermediaries and end users. So that means costs are going to go up, and that means you're going to see consolidation in the industry. So what does this all boil down to? That there will be less hedging continuously and more chunky type playing. And what that translates to in futures is, as a pricing mechanism, futures will be worse intraday. The market will start to swing on smaller volumes. But over the long run, you should see true price discovery come out. So it's kind of like gold market will become like this. He's got 1 foot in a bucket of hot coals and 1 foot in a bucket of dry ice, right? So the extremes are worse. On average, he feels fine. But during the day, I think you're going to see whippier moves, which if you're a stacker or you're an investor who's playing unleveraged, that's great. You're going to buy it. If you're a day trader also, you're going to do well because your one lot's not going to move the market. But if you're a big hedge fund, you're going to get killed. And I think we just saw that with the washout from almost 1900. So I think overall, it's better for the industry that is involved in physical products, and it's better for retail. It's worse for mid-sized institutions.
Yeah, it almost seemed like the market really priced that in going into it, and it wasn't a surprise, obviously, to anyone.
No, it definitely wasn't a surprise. I mean, it was delayed 4 or 5 times since 2013, and I say this genuinely with actually respect for government in a sense. If the government's going to change a rule like the BIS did, and they started in 2013, they don't want their customers, which is the banks, to be caught flat-footed. And, you know, I'll put on my tinfoil hat and say, yeah, this is ridiculous. It's rigged against us. But the bottom line is you can't have the whole system collapse, especially after Deutsche Bank and after the Grexit thing. And so anytime a crisis is coming, they're going to delay it. They're going to delay it. And in the end, it goes back to something that someone, that an economist said to me. Governments act after corporations get their proverbial shit together. So the BIS is checking, you know, are you guys ready? Are you guys ready? And if they're not ready, so these guys have had like 7 years to get ready. This isn't 6 months. You know, anybody who's not ready deserves to be carried out on a stretcher, so to speak. You know, so like you said, we saw it coming. And in the last 6 months, I have never seen so much froth on social media as I have seen in the last 6 months. Now, granted, there wasn't this much social media in 2013, but I had to turn it off. You know, I had to go to political Twitter to avoid silver Twitter for a while there, which is pretty messed up, Tom. But yeah, you're right.
So Vince, what is Gold Fix and what is your goal with it?
Well, first of all, the word Gold Fix comes from the LBMA and the LME when they would fix the price of gold, the morning fix and the afternoon fix. And I took that name a couple of years ago because it was ironic, because the price of gold is fixed. I mean, it's such an appropriate name, you know, if you believe there's manipulation, which we know there is. But the reason I did is because a couple of years ago, I was asked to work with Larry Benedict, one of the original market wizards. And I was honored to do that. And he wanted me to do a show. And my expertise is in options. And I'm like, well, I can do options. I can do oil. I can do whatever. I go, do you have anyone in metals? He's like, no. So I'll do metals. You know, and metals is a great place to jump off if you're teaching risk, which is what this is about, to answer your question. I think, you know, the goal fix started as me trying to have my daily routine replicated. When I had a company of like 30 guys, we'd have a morning meeting. It was a risk meeting. And so I started doing it for Larry Benedict and for his audience. And then, you know, he changed gears on what he wanted to do with his business model. And I said, you know what, I'll keep doing it. I took a break. And then because of a good friend of mine, Jeff, who actually encouraged me, another silver trader, which I should interview sometime. He's like, you know, he's older than me. And he knows the markets better than I do. Anyway, I digress. So the gold fix was designed to do basically three things. And in a broad conversation, it's designed to educate people so that they can use what they learn actionable. And so that there's no bias coming through, except for my bias to make sure you learn it right. The second thing is, and this is why I started it, is to prepare for the day. So when the market opens up at whatever, 8:30, by 7:30, people are going to have, it's kind of like reading the morning newspaper, you know, but it's from a gold person's perspective. So there's like a where the markets are now. And it ties in nicely with the pieces that I write for Zero Hedge. And the third thing is, it ties in with education, but we were talking about this off the air. And there are a lot of people out there that have hammers and they have toolkits, right? And they have tools in their toolkit, but they don't know how to use them necessarily, or they don't have the tools that they want, you know, or they have the tools and they can use them, but they don't have risk management as well-versed in their bag. So those are the three things I'm trying to accomplish with it. I'm a trader and a teacher. And fortunately, I can put the two together. So I'm trying to create like a curriculum for people to learn to do shit.
To learn to trade, right?
Yes.
Maybe give us your definition of trading the way that you're trying to present it, Vince.
Yes, that's better than I could say it. But look, there's a lot of people out there offering things. And if you look at the educational environment, and it's a good environment, it's great if you want to learn. The problem is trying to find what you want to do. So there's a guy out there who'll teach you how to trade. He'll teach you what an option is. These are the legitimate ones, not the scam guys we talk about, right? But the legitimate guys, you'll have a guy out there who's got good software, and you have a guy who's got a good system, you know, and tools and things like that. I'm just trying to create the environment for discipline, to show how to think. And, you know, look, I'm going to teach you about technical analysis now. You know, I have a reputation for hating it, but that's because I think it's the people that are teaching it. I'm going to teach about risk reward. I'm going to teach about the type of drills. I don't call it a coach, but I'm a coach. You know, do you want to get better? When someone says to me, I'm bullish and they buy strength, I go, what price are you going to sell it at? Like, you need someone there helping you in real time. And that's kind of what the mock tradings are.
So you mentioned technical analysis there, Vince. How can technical analysis simultaneously be bullshit, but also extremely important?
Oh, that's a good question. The toolkit analogy, I think, is appropriate here. I think, what is it that you said? You said, and I agree, you said, you know, there's tools out there and people aren't trained to use them. In the wrong hands, they become dangerous. Something to that effect. And I think that sounds like a platitude, but if you're a trader and you've heard that statement said to you, you're like, yeah, I'm led to believe that this is how to use something. I'm told this is how it's done, but I'm giving a jailhouse or a cursory education, and then I'm set free into the wild and I lose money and I don't know why. And there's no one there to help me. There's no customer service. There's the chart says to buy it if it goes up. And so what happens is a valid science, and it's a social science, it's not a hard science, a valid science that's about behaviors, and it's about the unification of monetary, of margin requirements and behaviors and psychology of a marketplace becomes treated like a hard science. Not unlike when we talk about the Fed governors treating economics like a hard science. It's going to 2.1%. They don't know that, you know? So technical analysis is a waste of time if you don't know how to use it. And most social sciences or arts, they have a subjectivity to them, and it's in the eye of the beholder. And so it's important for people, if they're learning technical analysis, which is part of the things I'm going to teach, they also have other tools in their toolkit, and those tools are risk management. So you've got your technical analysis toolkit, and one day I'll talk about volumes or trend lines or, you know, trend lines. What's a trend line? Everyone knows what a trend line is. Does anyone know how to draw one? Does anyone know there is a proper way to do it? And it's not right or wrong. It's you draw a trend line. It doesn't matter what your style is, so long as you do it the same way every time. You know, guys understand how to say wick to wick or body to body. These are things that you have to be disciplined with, whatever discipline you use. And the technical analysis, actually, this is important. I was fortunate to be taught risk management before knowing anything about technical analysis. And so when I finally talk to someone about it, you know, I give them options information. They give me charting information. I already had a rigorous risk management thing in there. The problem I think now is a lot of guys are being taught a cursory technical analysis thing without risk management. And that leads to disaster. And it's unfortunate. I'm trying to correct that.
Excellent. So what are some of the most important lessons that you're trying to bring to the table that you think people need to be more aware of?
Well, you had asked me about goals, and I think this kind of overlaps with that because I don't even think I answered the goals thing. But, well, just quickly, I mean, I want people to have risk management tools to complement whatever their trading style is. Now, you ask people their trading style, they don't even know. I'll go down a rabbit hole now, but some other time. The second thing is, my goal is I want to, and this is going back since 2008, I want to help level the playing field. I mean, this is an unprecedented time, right, for retail to have access to markets. It doesn't mean the playing field is leveled. It's the illusion of it being leveled. And I'm here to help you leverage the advantages that you do have to counteract the advantages that you don't have. You know, I'm not an altruist, but I want to help level the playing field. And that brings me to the third reason I'm doing it. I love being part of a teacher situation, whether I'm the student, and I learn from my students as well, whether I'm the student or the teacher, I love seeing a light bulb go off on someone's head and enriching their lives. That's basically it. So learning more about themselves. Those are the goals in a macro way. But, you know, I'm actually developing a curriculum right now. So when you ask, like, what am I doing right now? It's kind of like, we talked about this. I'm trying to hit people that learn different ways. So everybody wants to trade, right? Everybody that's talking to me wants to trade. And most of them are. And people learn different ways. And some of them learn by reading. Some of them learn by writing. Some of them learn by hearing. Some of them learn by doing. And these are actually, this is like from my teaching days, this is actually part of the process. And so I write a newsletter. They can read that. I do a video in the morning. They can see that. On the weekends, I'm doing classes now. And, you know, those are chaotic, but they're fun for now. You know, you got the people that are all into it. So give different ways for people to consume and learn. And eventually what you create is, I'm trying to recreate my old firm, which was a pressure cooker. You got in a room and you didn't leave until you understood a concept. It was very high pressure though, but we can't do that in this day and age. But what I can give you is, I can give you, how do you want to consume it? How do you want to eat this content any way you want to? And so that helps the teaching. And the missing piece for me, by the way, Tom, was, and I hit on it last week, the educational stuff, I don't want to talk about, I did this trade, I made money. And a lot of people can do that. I can't. And the reason I can't do that is, I'm thinking about Jeff when I'm saying this, is because what ends up happening is, if you make money trading, you attract a personality cult. Oh, Vince is a winner, that type of thing. And the problem with that is, and let's say I was a winner, right? When I have a bad day, it kills me. And I'm not a good hat switcher, right? And these people, they're really good at switching hats. And some of them probably aren't really trading, but that's not the point. The other thing is, so I had shied away from doing trades, but it really is important so people can see all these concepts in action. Like, I can teach you, you can teach me how to play Monopoly, but I won't see it integrated until we actually play the game and go around the board once. I mean, those type of things. So what happened was, a couple of days ago, actually last week, I said, you know what? The heck with it. We've talked about this enough. Let's do this paper trade. And what happened was, we started doing trades every day of the week, and they're on paper. They're not real, but I'm giving them entries, exits, stops. And then on Sunday, we discuss what the process was and why it worked or didn't work. So it's called mock trading, but that was the missing piece for the educational thing. So now I think we have everything we need to take people to a next level. And that's it. So it's a bunch of stuff.
So Vince, why don't you give the listeners something maybe a little concrete? What are the three C's and the three T's that you talk about?
Yeah, we were talking about that this weekend, actually. We were talking about a trader's edge. And the story goes, I had just left the first firm I worked at, Cooper Neff, and tremendous teachers, but they didn't pay well. So you end up hiring, learning, and starting on your own. And I'm in the bookstore, and I'm looking for a book because I don't know anything about anything except for my little niche, which is trading options. So I'm looking for, you know, you're looking for that Warren Buffett book on trading. And I bump in this guy, and he's a former Cooper Neff partner. And he says to me, I go, I'm trying to do this. And he'll say, oh, the three C's and the three T's. And I just sucked it all in and owned it. And the three C's are the edge that banks have or institutions have. And those would be cash. They have more money than us, right? Credit, they borrow at 0%. and captive customers. They have customers who call them up, get a free toaster, and then hit their bid and lift their offer. I mean, that's how the business works. And that's your banks. And then on the other side of it, to compete with those, and as we were taught at Cooper and App, to compete with those, you had the three T's. And the three T's were trading, training, and technology. We adopted technology quicker. We weren't as slow, like the government with a fax machine. We knew how to trade, meaning we knew how to risk management, and we knew how to train or replicate people. And what ended up happening is, if you look at it like a boat analogy, they're aircraft carriers that can't turn very quickly in the water. But when they get going, you're dead if you're in their way. And we're little, like, you know, minnow boats floating around, and we're basically tactically better than them. And they're strategically always in the right place. And what happened is, in the last 10 years with the democratization, what it really means is they just opened doors so more people can come in the market. Retail now has the technology. Well, they think they have the technology. And so the retail has technological access, but in some instances, they're being throttled. You have to find your edge. And for us, it used to be the technology, but now they have the same technology we do. What they don't have, though, is our flexibility, meaning they need job security. Like, there's a lot of stuff I can get into, but let me just suffice to say that your edge comes from, number one, knowing where you are in the big picture. I am a retail investor with tremendous risk management ability and a deep knowledge of options and a cursory technical analysis knowledge. But I don't see what the banks have anymore, because it's not coming through a broker on the floor. And I used to see it when I had an HFT outfit too. But you don't see it as much because the price is more transparent, but the market is more opaque. So they have more money than me. You have to keep saying they have more money than me. They can stay. Like, when people say don't fight the Fed, but then they fight the Fed, that's the point. I borrow at 0%. I don't have to win every pot. I'll just keep bluffing until it's a big pot and I'll win. So to bring it home, the edge is, do you have something that makes you better? Meaning, I have a mathematical formula that always makes money. That's an edge. The other edge is, I don't have a mathematical formula, but I manage my money better than you. So you and I are playing a coin toss game. The lands on heads, it's a dollar. Lands on tails, it's a dollar. So it's 50-50. We don't know who's going to win. But every so often, you know, I'll see that it's going to, for some reason, I know that it's going to land on heads three times in a row. It's volatility I'm talking about. And so then I'll bet more. So managing risk is an edge, because most people, especially retail, are not. They're buying the highs and selling the lows. The other edge is the first edge, which is having a way. What's the movie Margin Call? The way to do well is to be better, which means you have a system that works better. Be first, which is risk management, or cheat. So we can't cheat. Maybe they cheat, who knows? But that's it. I hope that answers your question. Mm-hmm.
So the last time I had you on, Vince, we were talking about trading gold. So what are some of the important levels that you're watching in gold right now? And what other factors or markets do you take into consideration when deciding how to trade gold?
Okay. It's hard to press me on levels. That's something that Michael Moore, actually, I use his technical analysis and other people's as well, but I use his for levels, and I use my risk management overlaid on that. But levels, broadly speaking, I'm going to buy it if it gets cheaper, unless there's a news item out that says to me it could go on. So I'm much more of a flow trader than a technical trader. The second part of your question, if I answer that, it'll probably help out a lot more. What are some other markets? Okay. You know, from time to time, gold will pick different markets to correlate itself with. And silver as well, right? Silver, it's behaving like copper today. It's behaving like gold tomorrow. Well, you know, for the longest time, gold would rally on a weak dollar, which makes sense, right? And it will also rally on weaker bonds, which, you know, okay, inflation, people buy gold. But then in the last 6 months, you're looking at correlated markets, gold wasn't rallying unless the bond market rallied. So even if the dollar was up, if the bond market was strong, gold would go up. But if the bond market was not, it would kind of put the brakes on it. And, you know, I saw that behavior and I said, why is that? And the narrative ended up becoming real interest rates need to go more negative. And that happens when bonds rally. The stock market is going to rally when it feels the Fed's not going to pull the rug on stimulus, which makes the bond market rally, which means you're not ending QE, which makes gold say it's safe for us to rally. And that's what's happened for the last 6 months. And the reason I'm bringing this up in such detail now is because in the last 3 days, I've started to see gold rally with bonds weaker. So to answer your question, for the last 6 months, I've been watching gold track the dollar and bond in the bond market positively and the dollar market invertedly, as it should. But in the last week, I've seen, and I'm not married to this trade yet, but you know, the last week I've seen gold ignore a weak bond market and go up. So how would I use that, I guess, is the next question. Well, if I'm bullish gold, if I come to the table and I'm bullish gold for whatever reason, you know, whatever, somebody visited me in my dreams and told me gold was going up or, you know, whatever, whatever my reason is, that's my bias. And I look for things in the market to either confirm or contradict my bias. So right now, in fact, I think I said it yesterday on Twitter or today, I said, you know, the dollar's up and bonds are down and gold's up $9. Why is that? And that should not happen. So either, if you want to be a cynic about it, well, let's wait 6 minutes and they'll just slam gold down, or the market is changing its behavior again, which I'm looking forward to. So for example, if gold is up $9, the dollar is up and bonds are up, and I see the dollar downtick, I'm probably going to plow in and get long gold because I know that that whatever is holding it back, gold's going to overperform is what I'm getting at. Same thing with silver. If you're bullish gold, buy silver. That's how it works. But that's it.
So Vince, you've said before that the rock for gold investment has been pushed up the hill and is about to roll down the other side. So what do you mean by this and why is it so?
Yeah, I mean, I feel that way in a more strategic long-term way, but I don't want to make it sound like tomorrow gold's going to go up because it's about to happen. I don't want to mislead people that way. Contextually, that was about Bitcoin, right? We talked about that. And it's because of Bitcoin that I think gold is about to become more of a reactive market, not one that just sits there and doesn't do anything. And I'll be specific to it. Over the last 6 months, Bitcoin has had a nice run higher. Okay. So to the extent that Bitcoin is risky, the bigger investors in it, whales, for lack of a better word, are now putting their actual Bitcoin with custodial banks, not overseas because of what's going on with the regulatory issue. So JP Morgan or Goldman Sachs, and this is legitimate risk management. Their customers, you know, they already, you know, you're, let's say you're worth $100 million and you've got $25 million with JP Morgan. And then they go, hey, Joe, why don't you give us your Bitcoin? We're in that business now. And you go, okay, fine, boom. Now what happens is the Bitcoin is in there. And then what happened was, and I remember the context of this now, Bitcoin and gold dropped precipitously. And it might've been right after Elon made that energy comment. And then intraday, JP Morgan says, we're recommending, because Bitcoin has a 4-to-1 volatility ratio with gold, we're recommending some of our Bitcoin customers, and I'm like, Bitcoin customers, they just started the business. That means they have the customer, they've been in place. Like, this is not overnight stuff. They've been doing this. We're recommending to our Bitcoin customers to allocate some funds, or institutions are putting some funds into gold. And gold rallied $40. It started down 20 and then up 20. And I went, now, if I'm a trader at a bank, and I know a comment like that can move gold $40, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to do that again and again and again. And I'm not saying that they're manipulating the market. Who knows? Maybe they are. But what I am saying is that they have clients now that are in Bitcoin that trust them. And when they say, move your money out of Bitcoin because it's going to have a problem, into gold, gold's now a piece. Gold could become very tradable soon. And that's what I mean by rolling down the other side of the hill. You know, it used to be a kind word. A kind word wouldn't move gold. A kind word would make gold rally $5. A negative word would make it drop $20. Now, a kind word and it rallied $40. Now, it's off the lows. Don't get me wrong. It's not like it rallied and went to $2,000. But that's what I mean by gold is now a diversification tool for Bitcoin profits. I mean, that's crazy, but think about it. So, you know, it benefits. The larger pie benefits everything.
So Vince, where do you kind of land on that gold versus Bitcoin debate? Do you think it needs to be one or the other, or do you think of both as serving a different purpose or maybe even the same purpose?
Yeah, I mean, there's an overlap, right? And I mean, people talk about it a lot. So, I mean, it's been talked about enough, but it's an evolving conversation. So it's appropriate to ask that again. If you don't understand Bitcoin, or if you're not sure, you should have some Bitcoin, right? Look, what's the old, you know, you should have 10% of your assets in gold. Okay, why did you buy your gold? I bought my gold because of inflationary hedge. Well, you should have 10% of your gold in Bitcoin, right? Okay, flip side of that is, now if you're younger, it's like, you know, why are you buying Bitcoin? Well, it's not because I'm worried about inflation, it's because of asset appreciation. And you know what? They should. If you're 30 years old, you're not married, or you're married, you don't have kids, and you have a job, you're not worried about it, then you should put some money into it. I mean, I'm not advising that. What I'm saying is you have the risk profile to do that. So if you're long gold as a hedge against inflation, putting a little money into a crypto portfolio is not a bad idea. If you think gold is going to be replaced by by Bitcoin, I got news for you. That's not happening. And neither do I think it's going to be a compliment to Bitcoin. It's going to be, I don't think people have talked about this. So I'm going to hit you with this. Bitcoin's going to end up being priced like gold, meaning it's going to be priced on an exchange eventually, years from now, but I'm right. It's going to be priced like gold. They're going to get it onto an exchange, okay? And they're going to regulate it and they're going to control it. And the reason they're doing that is because if you're a central banker and you hate Bitcoin, right? Let's just say you do, right? We don't know, right? But you hate Bitcoin. Or more relevantly, you really think that it's going to hurt your investors. I mean, you know, there's stuff going on with exchanges that have yet to be uncovered. Well, what you're going to do is you're going to try and get as much of the flow as you can stateside. And you're going to regulate it by putting it on an exchange. So you're going to see more and more of this come. And that's actually good for U.S. investors. It may not be good for U.S. speculators, but it's good for U.S. investors. The second part of it is Bitcoin will be priced like gold. And by that, I mean, you'll have the same type of risk that you have with gold. Stackers are buying it here and the futures are trading down there and you can't, you know, that type of stuff. But the other aspect of it is I want you to think about Bitcoin like oil. So it'll be priced like gold, but it's going to be hoarded like oil. And here's what I mean by that. And this is an opinion. Everything's an opinion, right? But this is a working opinion that I have, but it makes sense when you understand market structure. The United States before, you know, when Saudi Arabia was the only producer of oil, the United States couldn't control the supply of oil. So we created a strategic petroleum reserve. And then we influenced those markets with business deals and arms for oil and petrodollar. Well, Bitcoin is like that. Bitcoin is financial energy. Assuming that it works, 6 months from now, we could find out something we don't know. But let's just assume that it's fine because, you know, I think it is. Or they would have shut it down by now. Bitcoin is like oil. Oil is energy. If Bitcoin is potentially financial energy, it's potentially a weapon. It's potentially a tool. It's a chess piece on the board. So if there are only, let's to simplify the world, there's China and there's the US. Okay. And there's a lot of ifs here, but the point is all these ifs lead to you have to own Bitcoin. If you can't destroy Bitcoin, you can't. If you can't regulate it, well, you can't really regulate the supply side. You can regulate the demand side by protecting investors or throttling exchanges, but you can't regulate the supply side. It's going to be mined anywhere in the world. And now, if the dollar is not going to become the reserve currency, if China's currency might become the reserve currency, it becomes a tool to control financial energy. So I believe right now the U.S. government, and I have no information on this, but it's what I would do. They're creating a strategic Bitcoin reserve. They have to be doing that. I'm not saying that they're buying Bitcoin. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is, look, before the second Iraqi war, the government went to oil people, and I was ancillary to an oil person, and said, start finding different suppliers of oil. And private business handled it. But the government was like, you know what? There's going to be a problem. We don't know what it is, but you know, maybe it's, we didn't know what it was. It could be Israel or something like that. No one knew. But with Bitcoin, can you not imagine the government for the good of the citizens saying to JP Morgan or Goldman Sachs, you know what? This Bitcoin's not going away, but we've got to get a handle on this. Any of your customers that have it, you want to get that stuff stateside and protect them. And simultaneously, the government saying, okay, the more Bitcoin we have, the less of a weapon it is in whoever the enemy's hands are. So to answer your question after that long-winded thing is, I think the path it's on right now, it becomes priced like gold, meaning you really can't get it to go to infinity because it's too important. And it's going to be managed like oil as a strategic energy asset that we use to support our dollar. It will be a complement to gold, but it won't be gold. That's a lot. Did that make sense?
Yeah, there's some interesting pieces to consider there, Vince. Absolutely. So Vince, is there anything else you'd like to chat about here before we wrap up? I know the gold fix is somewhat available on your Twitter at @VLanceyPictures. And you also write some really interesting articles for Zero Hedge that I see here and there, but where can we find more of you?
Yeah, I mean, if I want to talk about anything, I'll be, you know, I would like to have more people find out about what we're doing. And so between 7:30 and 8:30 is when the gold fix recording goes up, and we do a Bitcoin one as well. There's a newsletter on Sundays. And you could probably find something I put on Zero Hedge at some point and the weekend classes. So it's growing. I think it's kind of cool and it's going to evolve. So the more diverse of an audience I get, the more I'll figure out what people want to learn. So yeah, I'd appreciate that. Thanks.
Excellent, Vince. Of course, we'll put the links to all those things in the show notes as well. Vince, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks, Tom.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.